San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a competitive long-distance runner. He's a philanthropist. He's a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. He's a CPA extraordinaire and a family office advisor to many high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. And Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying the air conditioning in the studio.
Yes, sir. And it's a little toasty today. And, of course, you are way out in East County.
Hit 101 in this place called San Diego Country Estates, which is a suburb of Ramona. Is it possible that Ramona can have a suburb?
Yes, it is.
I guess. Because.
But before we get into the show, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Wendy Gillespie, who was a guest on the show and one of the producers of Allegiance, which is heading to Broadway, as you well know.
Yep.
And Paul Mass, who is a retired attorney. Wendy gave us a nice tour of BizTown, which is affiliated with Junior Achievement. And we had a show on Junior Achievement in the past as well with Tara Michener. And Richard, you've been to BizTown yourself, correct?
Went to BizTown about a month before Tara Michener was our guest on the show. It was a really neat experience because I had a bunch of the kids in doing their BizTown, their business town, where they were learning about commerce.
You know, that's the only BizTown of its kind in the state of California, which is pretty impressive. And fifth graders from all over the county, they are booked to the gills here. Every day there's a different group of fifth graders coming in there learning about money, business, finance, commerce, and society. And they love it. I mean, it's the energy in there is pretty
impressive. Yeah, now if we could just send a few congressmen over, we might get some things done. But that remains to be seen.
Absolutely. But hey, I'm excited about tonight's show because one of our very first meetings, this subject came up. And why don't you just take it away? Tell us about, you start where you want to start, Richard.
I want to get our guest on the line real quick, but ever so swiftly, I was out at San Diego Country Estates because today was the 40th anniversary of a very famous tennis match, one of the most famous tennis matches in the history of this country, against a gentleman named Bobby Riggs and a woman named Margaret Court. So I went out to San Diego Country Estates, not only to treat all the ladies to Mother's Day brunch, but just to see if there was any activities or festivities going on to commemorate the 40th anniversary of this famous tennis match that happened up at San Diego Country Estates on May 13th, 1973. And guess what? There were no festivities or activities going on whatsoever, and it was hotter than blue blazes at 101. But on the line, we have...
To clarify, though, it was Mother's Day 40 years ago.
Technically, the anniversary is tomorrow for May 13th, but effectively the match was played on Sunday, May 13th, 1973.
So, who's on the line?
And on the line is Lorne Kuehl, who was Bobby Riggs' practice partner, as well as many other things with Bobby and for Bobby during his career. But back in 73, he was the guy who practiced with Bobby not only during this match, but also the, I guess you might say, better remembered match known as the Battle of the Sexes against Billie Jean King later that year in September of 73 down in the Houston Astrodome. Lorne, are you with us?
Hello?
Lorne, can you hear us?
Yeah.
All right. How are you? How are you tonight, Lorne?
I'm okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear.
All right.
So, what do you think? Does 40 years go by quickly or what?
You tell me. How old are you?
I'm 55.
you were 15 when this match happened.
Actually, technically, I was 14. I was 14. I didn't. I'm not going to be 55 till June 3rd, so I was almost 15.
Well, I was 29 years old when this occurred, so I remember it pretty well.
And I'm correct.
Obviously, you're talking about the Mother's Day Massacre, Bobby Riggs versus Margaret Court.
Yep, 40 years ago today, if we round off by one day.
The number one woman in the world, right? And to this day has the most Grand Slam titles of all women, despite all the great champions that have come after her, right?
Well, the truth of it is she's not a household name because she doesn't get the publicity she deserves. Number one, because she's not an American, and secondly, she never sought publicity and wasn't in the limelight in the same fashion Billie Jean King was. But there's most
or Bobby Riggs
most tennis people will tell you that she was the greatest tennis player that ever lived.
Yeah.
He won, as you said, 62 Grand Slams.
Right.
I think 24 in singles, I believe, 38 in doubles or mixed doubles.
Right.
Yeah.
She was, at the precise moment she played Bobby, she was number two in the world, but reascended to number one later in 73. She had taken some time off in 72 on maternity leave, which hurt her ranking.
Well, you do know the year that Bobby Riggs beat her, you do know that 1973, she won the Australian Open.
Mm-hmm.
She won the French Open.
Yep.
She won the U.S. Open.
Yep.
She won the doubles in the Australian Open and the French and the U.S. Open. She won six Grand Slams the year that Bobby Riggs beat her 6-1, 6-2.
Right, wow. And she's also a Grand Slam winner. That is to say, she won all four in 1 year. I believe that was 1970. In fact, that streak, I think, was six singles titles in a row. All four in 70, I think, one in 69, and the first one, Australia, in 71.
And folks, this is with wooden rackets, folks. Wooden rackets, right, Larnie?
Well, yeah, Bobby didn't use a wooden racket at the time. He actually used a head racket made out of aluminum.
Right.
Margaret Court used a wood racket.
That's what I'm talking.
You know, wooden rackets aren't that antiquated. You can play good tennis with wooden rackets. They used gut strings in those days, and the ball came off of there just as fast as it comes off today. The only difference is today they put a lot more spin on the ball, and the surfaces have slowed down. But believe me, the rackets aren't that big a deal compared to the yesteryear.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I
don't want our listeners
to believe they are, but
I want our listeners to know Larnie Kuhl is a tennis historian. He not only runs the Bobby Riggs Tennis Club, which is in Encinitas, California, but he's also the curator of the Bobby Riggs Foundation Tennis Museum, which is an amazing, amazing place to visit because the artifacts and the tennis history inside of this building are beyond belief. So,
just up where in Solana Beach, right?
It's off of Santa Fe, not Lomas Santa Fe, but rather Santa Fe, just north of Solana Beach.
Right.
It's in Encinitas, directly across the street from San Diego High School, 875 Santa Fe Drive, and the museum is open to the public, Bobby Riggs Tennis Club in Encinitas.
And it is a cool place, and you've got some tremendous artifacts. You actually have the warm-up jacket and the shorts that Bobby wore during the Astrodome match, right?
I have a lot of his memorabilia there, the Wimbledon trophies, U.S. Open trophies, and the racket he used when he played Billie Jean King, and also Margaret Court, and a lot of other interesting items in the museum.
Yeah. And, it's an amazing place. It really is. But, Larnie, go back in time 40 years to 1973, because you were sort of Bobby's right-hand man.
Well, how did you two meet? I'm curious how you two ever met in the first place.
Well, when I was 15 years old, Bobby Riggs' son came to Decatur, Illinois, and played a tournament.
Would that be Larry?
Yes, Larry Riggs. And we housed Larry because that's how you did it in those days. You stayed at people's houses. So he stayed at my house in Decatur, and I come to Chicago and stay at his house. And so, therefore, he became my best friend, and I met his father through Larry Riggs. And we became close over the years, and I ended up, the last 25 years, managing Bobby and representing him. And then I worked for him during all these matches. I was the coach of the match when he played Margaret Court and Billie Jean, and I worked directly for the promoter of the Billie Jean King match, which was Jerry Parencio. Jerry Parencio promoted the Muhammad Ali Frazier fight at the Forum. He owned Tandem Productions, which was all in the family, Maude, Sanford and Son, and he was a promoter. So Jerry Parencio was who I worked for, and he the one that promoted the Billie Jean King Bobby Riggs match.
He's quite a guy.
First, we're talking about Ramona now, and we're talking about San Diego Country Estates, and the idea that Bobby had in the first place in November of 72. Turned into this big event on Mother's Day in Ramona because of Ray Watt, Watt Industries. He's the one that built San Diego Country Estates. He wanted the promotion, and he knew that by having something like this out there would bring a lot of attention to Ramona and to the world in general, and it would put Ramona on the map, and that's what happened. The match became famous.
How did you get all those Hollywood? And I was on CBS television, and how'd you get all those Hollywood stars to show up? I mean, through I guess friendships and relationships, right? I mean, you had John Wayne handed out the winner's check, right?
Yeah, he sure did. And when he handed out the winner's check, Bobby actually dropped it by mistake, and he said, Bobby, for crying out loud, this isn't a crap game. Pick that check up off the floor.
That went out on national television? Oh, my gosh.
I remember that very well. That was funny. And, you know, Bobby was a tremendous promoter, and it caught the attention of everybody, and the people came. They weren't recruited. They just wanted to come to the tennis.
Huh.
And John Wayne, in particular, liked tennis because of the fact that he actually had a tennis club in Newport Beach called the John Wayne Tennis Club. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Is that still there? Is that still there?
A tennis fan. And he came down to watch Bobby Riggs play.
Huh.
He wasn't recruited. He just came on his own.
But let's set the historical context. At that time, or maybe about a year before that, Billie Jean King had broken away from the tour and created her own separate women's tour with eight other professionals known as the Original Nine. This thing, which is now the WTA, was originally known as the Original Nine. And Billie Jean was being quoted quite often in the press saying that women players should get equal pay for equal play. And, of course, the women's liberation movement was going on simultaneously with all of this action in the tennis world.
And I think her point was, since the women's game draws just as many eyeballs and fans into the stands, despite whatever level of tennis you think it is, I think that was her argument, just from a business standpoint. And I think that's a legitimate gripe, don't you think, Lorne?
Yeah, I mean, sure. She was for women's rights, and she was right. The women weren't getting equal pay. They weren't giving scholarships to women athletes in school. In fact, there wasn't even high school tennis. When I was in high school, you couldn't even do it. And I, just for example, did you guys know, which I bet you do not, that in 1962 in high school basketball for women, they were allowed to dribble the ball only one time, and then they had to pass the ball because they didn't think women could run the full length of the court dribbling.
Oh
right.
God.
They also in some states where they had two women's teams on the court at once. One would play the offensive court and one would play the defensive court, again, because they wouldn't have to run the whole court that way.
Oh, my gosh. And, of course, I think the quintessential thing is women couldn't even run the Boston Marathon until 1972, which is pretty mind-boggling.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was a lot going on.
Yeah, there was, and Billie Jean was leading the banner for women.
So
Bobby originally challenged Billie Jean King to the match, but she wouldn't accept the offer. But guess what? Margaret Court did, and she fell into the trap, the tender trap. and Bobby threw out the bait, and she bit.
Hey, let's...
we're going to take a break, Lorne. Hang on. We're going to be right back.
Hang on. We'll be back with more Fix Your Money and Your Life right after this. All right, we are back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life, and our guest is Lorne Kuehl, the manager and tennis partner to the famous Bobby Riggs back in the day in the 70s, and back with Richard, who knows a ton about this, so welcome back.
So Lorne, going back in history, a few months before the match against Margaret Court, Bobby did a press conference at the Westgate Hotel where he waved, I think it was a $5,000 cashier's check at the time, which became $10,000 in the air, and that's where he basically issued the challenge specifically to Billie Jean King. Were you at that press conference, or do you remember that?
No, I was not there.
Okay, yeah, because that was sort of the first time Bobby came out in the news with that. As you mentioned, Billie Jean avoided Bobby. She was really busy doing her thing, getting her women's tour going, but Margaret Court, of course, wasn't making any money playing tennis either. But I heard a rumor that Margaret really was lobbying for the venue to be at some place, I think, in Florida. And I think, wasn't it Tony Trabert who was the guy that Ray Watt hired to sort of start his tennis operations there in Ramona? Am I right about that?
Yes, I think you're right. That's right. He did hire Tony Trabert.
Yeah, so
Ray Watt was very clever. He was a developer. And just so you know, the San Diego history of Ray Watt here, he was the developer of what is now known as Fairbanks Ranch, Fairbanks Country Club. He made a deal with the city that he would bring the Equestrian Olympics to San Diego, and if they would let him develop the property, which is now known as Fairbanks Ranch Country Club. And they leased it to him for $1 a year for 30 years. And he was a very successful promoter, and he did a lot for the San Diego economy.
And by the way, those Equestrian Olympics happened here in 1984 at Fairbanks.
And I remember the U.S. Equestrian Club was right up there in Torrey Pines there across from UCSD for many years, right? I know.
I don't remember that, but I do know that they ran some equestrian events right on the golf course at the Fairbanks Ranch Country Club. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you play the golf course today, you'll still see a couple of the jumps and the obstacles out there that the horses had to run. So what I'm saying was Ray Watt was a very brilliant developer and a good promoter, and that's why he saw the value in bringing Bobby Riggs to Ramona to play this match.
So when Ray Watt meets Bobby Riggs meets Jerry Parenteau, it's like a match made and had the stars lining up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but Lorne, Bobby was one of the all-time great self-promoters, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, Bobby was a master promoter of himself and also of tennis, and he saw this opportunity to make money, and he saw an opportunity to promote tennis, which is the game he loved, and he had a history of promotions. He started the Pro Tour back in the 40s. He had Kramer. He had Gonzalez. He was barnstorming back then, so this was nothing new to Bobby Riggs.
But even before that, Bobby did something in 1939 at Wimbledon that's never been done before or since. Can you tell us what that was?
Well, yeah, he won the singles, he won the doubles, and he won the mixed doubles all in one try, his first attempt at Wimbledon.
Right, all in the same
And no one will ever do that.
And he did something else. He bet on himself to pull off that trifecta.
Yeah, he did. He bet at the time it was legal to do that, of course. He went to the bookies, and he bet £100 that he would win Wimbledon. And a pound was worth $5 in those days.
Right.
So he bet £100, and he got 3-1. That he would win Wimbledon. And then he said to the bookie, well, what if I win the singles and the doubles? And the guy says, well, we'll give you 6-1 on that. And he said, okay, well, then I'll tell you what. I want to parlay the singles money, if I win, into the doubles bet. Mm-hmm. And then he said, well, what if I win the mixed doubles too? And the guy said, that's impossible. No one's ever done that. We'll give you 12-1 on that.
Yeah.
So he goes out and he wins the singles at 3-1. He collects now. £300.
Right.
Now he gets 6-1, and then he's going to win the singles and doubles. He wins that. Now he's got £1,800.
Right.
Now he gets 12-1 on £1,800, and he ends up winning whatever that multiplication
is. $21,600.
And so he ends up winning over $100,000.
Right. So which at the time was
1939, that's a lot of money.
That was a king's ransom in 39. And, of course, Bobby wound up being ranked number one in the world in 39. And then, as you mentioned, he came back as a pro after World War II, not only as a player, but then also as a promoter of some of the great players like Kramer
and
Gonzalez
Richard,
and so on.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
This is a finance show. Is this a money show?
It's a money show. That's why we had to do some money. But
Bobby Riggs was a very shrewd when it comes to money and promotions and so forth. And I think that financial part of this whole thing is pretty interesting.
It's fascinating. The other thing that he did that's really relevant to what we're talking about, he was the first promoter of a famous female tennis player when he was promoting what were called these barnstorming tours in the 50s. It was a woman known as Gorgeous Gussie Moran, M-O-R-A-N. And she was like the first female sex symbol on the tennis tour. And so she would, I forget who she played against. I think she got up to maybe number 4 in the world, but she would be on the barnstorm.
Let's talk about something colorful with Bobby. Okay?
Go ahead.
You got listeners out there.
I know.
Don't want to hear about some of these old people.
But that's colorful.
Let's talk about some of his philosophies, okay?
Yeah, let's talk about.
Let's feed the listeners a little of this. Here's Bobby's philosophy.
Yeah.
The male is king, the male is supreme. And the women belong in two places, the bedroom and in the kitchen.
Oh, my God.
And when he put that out there,
whole
world went crazy.
Headlines.
And they fell for it. And they watched him on TV. And it was just a big charade. And he was a P.T. Barnum. And they got the whole world interested in this thing. 100 million people ended up watching these matches when he played Margaret Court and Billie Jean King.
What?
And he got an all-time record of $750,000. From ABC for this match.
Right.
You know what you get for tennis today? You don't get anything.
You get nothing today.
You're lucky if you just get the stuff on the air.
Houston paid $250,000 for the right to bring it to Houston. I mean, he had the stake.
$300,000.
Oh, $300,000.
$300,000 they paid for a site fee.
Which
Bobby Riggs went out and did a high karate commercial. It was an aftershave.
I love
picked
that.
Picked up $75,000 for that.
The one where he
did a lot of different commercials. Did an American Express commercial. He and Billie Jean King. He's picked up $50,000 for that. And that's 40 years ago.
And sugar daddy, not to mention sugar daddy's paid him 50 grand, right?
Daddy paid him a deal to wear his jacket during the Billie Jean King match. They made him a deal because I made the deal for him.
Right.
They made him a deal. If he wears a sugar daddy jacket and gives a lollipop to Billie Jean King, they give him $20,000. Well, when he went out to play Billie Jean King, he had the warm-up jacket on. And you know what? He played the entire set with the Sugar Daddy warm-up jacket on. Now, if you want to translate that into advertising dollars, the Sugar Daddy jacket for the first set, which lasted probably 45 minutes, I don't know what that comes out to, but they were so happy with him for doing that that they ended up giving him a $40,000 a year contract for 10 years. And so, you know, Bobby was pretty good at this kind of stuff, and he would turn lemon into lemonade. You know,
absolutely.
What I mean? He knew how to do that.
Well, we'll have more lemonade. We'll come back after these announcements.
Hang on, everybody. Yeah. Stay tuned. It's your money and your life and your tennis game.
You got it. See you in a bit. All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life, and over to Richard to thank all of our sponsors.
We want to thank all of our sponsors, UBS with Mr. Michael Coranta and Drew Freitas, Joel Grushkin at Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow, Jason Kruger at Signature Analytics, the best CFO company here in San Diego, Rich Gaines, estate planning attorney at Family Legacy Legal, also his buddy Ken Druck hosted a great young women's leadership seminar yesterday, Saturday, that my 16-year-old Demi attended and had a tremendous experience at. Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton with the best business bank in San Diego, Regents Bank. Our favorite CPAs, Don Epic and Paul Polito. CPAs, Don, I'm confirming breakfast appointment tomorrow at 8 a.m. at Ruby's in Carlsbad with you right here on the air. And Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, the best business valuation expert west of the Mississippi. Hey, Lorne, while we've been shouting out about our sponsors, who our listeners can learn more about on our website, www.iymoney.com, tell us how our listeners can contact you at the Bobby Riggs Tennis Club and Museum.
Well, you know, you can simply call the telephone number, which is 760-753-4705, or go to Bobby Riggs Tennis Club on the Google it. I think it's Bobby Riggs Tennis, BobbyRiggs.com or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. Just Google it. It comes up. It comes up when you Google it.
You'll see the tennis club and the museum on there. And, you know, and by the way, I want to get. Can I make a plug on something else?
Go ahead.
Because Bobby would love it if I throw in a plug.
Because you're going to be on TV. Bobby, I was going to ask you. Go ahead.
Whenever Bobby was on a show, he would always plug something. And
right.
He was unbelievable at that. For example, when he went on the Johnny Carson show one time, you know, Johnny Carson is ready to interview him. And the first thing Bobby starts talking about is the matchmate ball machine. And he practiced on a matchmate ball machine. And he was on that for like 2 minutes. You know, because they gave him $1,000 to make the plug.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So
you know, I saw that.
Lorne,
I saw that the other night because I've got access to the Carson archives. And Johnny comes out. He did the whole show in a tennis outfit. I don't know if you recall, but he did the whole show in a tennis outfit. So.
Yeah, he did, and he hit balls with Johnny Carson there. Then Johnny loved Bobby so much, he took him back to his house after that show and did magic tricks for him for 2 hours.
Really?
But Lorne, you got something coming up on TV. Is that what you're going to plug, or is it something else?
Yeah, I'm just going to say
this
weekend, next Sunday on the Tennis Channel at 9:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m., I own the ASICS Easter Bowl, the largest junior championship in the world, and we have a nice TV premiere of the show on the Tennis Channel next week at 9:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m.
Huh.
If anybody's interested in the best junior tennis players in the world.
And what's what's the name of the show again, Lorne?
It's the Easter Bowl.
Easter Bowl, okay.
The Easter Bowl, and it's on the Tennis Channel next Sunday, May 19th at 9:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. It's shown twice.
Nice,
and
nice.
So, okay, let's talk about the match now.
Yeah, let's talk about the match because, you know, so here we are in the middle of nowhere in Ramona. Now, you and Bobby camped out there to get ready, right?
Yeah, we went out there, you know, we drove down whatever it was, Wildcat Canyon Road,
yep.
Where all the drug smugglers used to make their drops out there, and their midnight drops, and we went out there, and we holed out there, and Margaret Court was there practicing. Tony Travert was warming her up every day, trying to emulate Bobby Riggs. Tony Travert was a Wimbledon champion, and he was pulling for Margaret, and I brought Chico Hagee out there to practice with Bobby, a very good player from La Jolla, a well-known family name in La Jolla, the Hagee name.
Sure.
And so Bobby was giving a lot of male practice. And so Margaret Court, one of the things I guess it's upset Margaret Court, Richard, was they told me that her little son had thrown her tennis shoes in the toilet.
Yeah, Danny, her little boy, he was about a year old. His name is Danny, and her shoes went in the toilet the morning of the match.
Her only pair, right?
Yeah, so that was supposedly something that upset her. Then they all say one thing that where the match was really won is when they walked on the court and Bobby Riggs presented her with a bouquet of roses for Mother's Day, and she curtsied. She curtsied to Bobby Riggs.
Right.
And everybody was on top of her for that. They, why did you curtsy to Bobby Riggs? Well, it was a knee-jerk reaction. Because
right.
She goes on the center court at Wimbledon, and the Duchess of Kent would give her roses on the center court, and she just kind of, she would curtsy to the Queen or to the Duchess of Kent.
Right.
And
right.
So she made a little faux pas there, by curtsying to Bobby. And everybody said that was the beginning of the end right there.
Yeah.
But going back to how Bobby was training, he was doing something that was groundbreaking in terms of his training, wasn't he? Wasn't he one of the first athletes to use nutritional supplements to augment his performance?
Yeah, I mean, you want the truth of it, or you want me to just go along with that?
No, tell us the truth, because I'm telling you what everybody's written.
Yeah, he took vitamins like crazy because he thought he could get a vitamin endorsement.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Vitamins in A, and people were coming in making him offers to take vitamins. He was gobbling down vitamins. He hated it, but he wanted to get a vitamin.
He had the most expensive urine in the United States, probably.
Everything he could. Everything he did was geared towards making money. We'd be on an airplane, and we'd be flying on an airplane. He'd get every magazine he could, and he'd rip out pages of people that did advertising in the magazine, and he'd call them up on the phone, or I'd call them on the phone and make deals with them. So he was always thinking of putting money in his pocket.
But depending on who you believe, he was taking between 60 and 200 pills a day, and I don't know what's true or not true because I wasn't in his room watching.
Actually, he was taking about 300 pills.
So it was 300, okay.
He was gobbling down, and he would...
He was lucky he didn't get vitamin poisoning, for God's sake.
But, yeah, I mean, it was crazy. He had some wacky doctor with him named Rio Blair.
Yeah, Rio Blair, yep.
But the media was all over this. Wasn't it a media circus, though? I mean, how many cameramen and reporters and everything? I mean, they were all over him like a swarm of bees, right?
Well, it was. And believe me, again, the whole thing that caught the imagination of the public was that he took the most common battle in the world that happens every single day in every single household. And you know what that is? It's versus woman.
Man versus woman.
And he took that and he used tennis as a stage and presented that confrontation that we all have every single day of our lives, and therefore the whole world got attracted to it.
But you got to set the table. I mean, in the 70s, the women's movement was a serious, large... women were in the streets, yelling and screaming and rallying, right? I mean, that had not happened before.
Yeah, I mean, in those days, the women were... The women's movement was there, and the women were burning their bras and throwing their nylons in trash bins and everything else. But see, Margaret Court, she wasn't a miss. She was a Mrs.
Right.
She was a mother.
Right.
She didn't get into all that stuff.
Right.
And so she showed up at the match unsuspecting.
Mm-hmm.
She thought this was going to be kind of like just an exhibition match and this and that. She hadn't got caught up in all these social ramifications. She's from Australia.
Yeah.
She didn't care about this stuff.
Right.
And she showed up there and boom. She kind of got ambushed.
Yeah.
So Lorne, tell us about the match. What happened?
I'll tell you, Richard, I'll tell you one it's a Ripley's Believe It or Not true story. And this involves finance again. The night before the match, I had a dream, God's truth, that Bobby Riggs beat Margaret Court 6-2, 6-1.
Uh-huh.
I woke up in the morning before the match. I said to Bobby, you know what? You can't believe it. I had a dream that you won this match 6-2, 6-1.
Yeah.
And his exact words were, that is a dream. And so he had no clue. And I said, you know what? I want to make a bet on the match. So we called Jack Dreyfus, the Dreyfus Mutual Fund.
Oh,
you know that is?
Sure.
Very famous mutual fund.
Yep.
We called Jack Dreyfus on the phone, and I bet him $1,000. Bobby made the bet for me, and I picked up an extra $1,000 on the match from the Dreyfus Mutual Fund. So... anyway, long story short, he goes out and he plays tennis, and she was bewitched, bothered, bewildered. She didn't know what hit her. There's 3,000 or 4,000 people in the stands, and he beat her 6-2, 6-1.
Hmm.
And
Well, he was dinking, slicing, lobbing. She had been practicing against Trabert, who hit harder. Margaret, of course, was a great serve and volley player, so she actually played a power game. She clearly didn't know what to expect or what was going to hit her.
Hey, let me ask you, before the match, did Bobby have any encounters with Margaret and try to get in her head like Muhammad Ali did with Foreman and all these, in a similar fashion?
Well, you know, Joe, you draw an interesting parallel there, because a lot of people compared Bobby to Muhammad Ali because he had a, quote, a mouth. And Ali was the mouth, I believe.
Sure. Yep, he was
Bobby
the mouth.
Bobby was a mouth. And he, I do not recall any specific psychological encounters with Margaret at all. We saw her from time to time, would walk by, and cordial hellos and things like that. But I don't recall anything other than when they had the press conference together. They had some interchanges at the press conference. And so, but Margaret Court, like everybody, she had a little weakness, and her one weakness was that from time to time in a match, she would fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened here. And she kind of fell apart, and Bobby beat her because it really was a false score. And when I say a false score means that if they played that match 10 straight times, Bobby Riggs would not beat her 6-1, 6-2. Now, that's the fact of the matter.
Huh.
And the same thing with the Billie Jean King match.
Yeah.
That was a false score.
That's
if he
great.
Played her 10 times, that wouldn't have happened. He would have played her a lot closer.
All right. Well, let's hold it right there, Lauren. We come back for one more segment. We're loving this. Hang on. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life after this. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with Lorne Kuehl, Bobby Riggs, famous manager, and Richard Musio. So take it away, Richard.
So Lorne, Bobby, of course, absolutely demolished Margaret Court 6-2, 6-1. This, again, would be May of 73. Would you agree that put Billie Jean King in a position where if she wanted to keep talking in public about how women deserve equal pay for equal play, that she was going to have to step up and play Bobby? And
Billie Jean looked at it like Margaret had embarrassed women and all the progress she'd made as a woman tennis player trying to get equal prize money, and that women's tennis was set back by this loss, and that the women were no good and so forth. So she picked up the banner for the women and carried it and took up the challenge and said she's going to correct that situation, and she went out and played them.
Yeah, here's the thing I think most people don't know about the Mother's Day Massacre. Had Margaret Court won that match, then there probably never would have been a second match at the Houston Astrodome, because there never would have been a reason to have the second match. Secondly, Margaret Court, as you mentioned earlier, Lorne, was simply not the person to carry the banner of women's liberation like Billie Jean King became, because Margaret didn't believe in it. So to me, the historical implications of the first match are fascinating, because but for what happened, I don't think there would have been this extravaganza at the Houston Astrodome just over 4 months later on September 20th, 1973.
And there's a footnote, Richard.
I mean, like women's suffrage, maybe eventually all this progress women made would have happened, but there is no question that the social ramifications of this match have impacted every single family and woman in the United States. And, for example, Title IX,
mm-hmm.
which is now enables every women's athletic team to receive the same amount of funds that the men's do through congressional action. This is all a byproduct of this match that Bobby Riggs played, and equal pay in the workplace, and all kinds of things like this. Billie Jean King was recognized as one of the most 100 influential people in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this is due to the match that Bobby played.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say that Bobby really won the match. You know why? Because had he lost it, just like you say, Richard, it would have been lost and buried forever. No one would have ever written about it.
Mm-hmm.
But because had he won the match, they would have forgotten about it. But since he lost it, we're doing a radio show about it 40 years later. They're making movies about it. Yeah, they're still talking about it.
Yeah, it's going to go on for a long time.
And on top of that, he loved women, and his epitaph, he says, because I put women on the map, right? So.
But Lorne, another boom. But another boom.
It was a charade. It was a charade.
Yeah.
He knew it. The people close to Bobby knew that this was a charade. And all the women fell for it. My God, they wanted to poison him. They wanted to shoot him.
Yeah.
They wanted to sue him.
Here's the other dirty little secret. They became very good, close friends, Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King, right?
Billie Jean King is fabulous. She loves Bobby Riggs.
Yeah.
And as serious as she took the match at the time, She understood everything. She's very smart. She got it all.
Yeah.
She really got it.
But, Lorne, another thing happened, and, of course, you're a tennis historian and one of the biggest fans of tennis on this planet. The Billie Jean King-Bobby Riggs match then basically was the start of what we call the great tennis boom, wasn't it?
Well, he was the first guy to—he and Jimmy Connors were the first people to really get tennis on major television.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave birth to modern-day tennis on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the first things.
But
really happened.
But I remember after the Astrodome, though, Lorne, I mean, I saw guys and gals and married couples on tennis courts, you know, weeks later. Courts were filled all over the country. People had never picked up a racket, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it was a tennis boom because of all this. It affected the whole economics of the whole sport.
And
I want to throw this in.
Okay.
BobbyRiggs.net is our address for the tennis club at the museum.
Yeah, I saw that.
BobbyRiggs.net.
And not only that, Americans dominated tennis for the next 20, 25 years after the Astrodome, correct? I mean, so maybe that was a big catalyst.
They did. Well, you know, maybe. You know, we've always had a good history of American champions until the last 5, 7, 8 years.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And, but, you know, Bobby Riggs was a unique guy. And and he lived there in San Diego. He loved San Diego. And, in fact, here's another Bobby Riggs fact. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the very first tournament he ever won in his life was right here in La Jolla, California, at the community center down there when he was 13.
Yeah, that's what my Uncle John told me. I have no way to verify that. But, yeah, for listeners who don't know, my father's only sister, Marion, who we called Annie Bunn, married John Riggs, one of Bobby's older brothers, which is how I sort of came to be involved in the Bobby Riggs world in 73 when I got hired to make his scrapbooks. I won't tell you the circumstances behind how I got hired, only that I was in position to get hired because of the fact that my aunt married one of Bobby's brothers. My Uncle John told me once that the first tournament that he won, indeed, was a public tournament down here in La Jolla, California. Bobby was also a great table tennis player. Did you ever play table tennis against him, Lorne?
Yeah, a lot. I could never beat him.
he was good.
He won the Minnesota State table tennis championships one year.
Yeah.
Well, he was a tremendous athlete.
Richard's
and in fact, you know, I didn't even tell you, Richard, but about a week ago, I went up to Los Angeles to accept the award. They had a Hall of Fame ceremony for all the great athletes of Southern California high schools in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And he went to Franklin High School.
Right.
And, I can't tell you all the Warren Moon, quarterback. I mean, just one great athlete after another was honored, and he was one of them.
Huh.
Of course, posthumously, I took the award for him.
Huh.
But he was a great athlete.
Well, here's the thing about Bobby and Billie Jean. A lot of people don't know this. They both basically grew up on public courts, Bobby in Los Angeles and Billie Jean in Long Beach. At the time, most great tennis players were coming out of, shall we say, high or better economic circumstances where they might be tutored by the USTA or you know, playing at private clubs. But that was not the case with Bobby or Billie Jean. So they had that in common.
I guess the only
tennis is big business now,
yeah.
And a lot of it's due to Bobby Riggs.
Yeah,
and that was the largest purse in history at the time. That was $100,000 when he played Billie Jean King.
Winner take all, and let's make sure people know it was by the men's rules. Billie played 3 out of 5, not 2 out of 3, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
she played most of the terms.
Yeah,
it was over 30,000 people live at the Astrodome compared to about 3,500 at the Mother Day's Massacre. I guess the TV viewership was about 90 million for the second match compared to about 10 million for the first.
If we would have had pay per view in that day, it would have been an unbelievable purse.
She would have been selling. Bobby would have been selling hamburger grills like George Foreman.
Hey, by the way, Foreman was at the second match.
George Foreman was at the match,
yep.
By the way.
Huh. Yep. He was. I saw him. Foreman was...
And most of the black athletes, I think, were for Billie Jean, with the exception of Jim Brown, from what I read in one book. I don't know how true that is, but they saw they liked the underdog aspect of that and everything. So, but
yeah, I went with Bobby once, and he beat Jim Brown out of about $100 one day. He had a temper. He didn't want to lose.
How did he beat 100? What did he beat him out of $100 for? Doing what?
Well, we went over to a guy's house named Jack Hansen, who owned a discotheque in Los Angeles called the Daisy.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Brown used to hang out there, and we went over there. And Bobby's trying to, you know, grind people in on a daily basis to make money. and Jim Brown was there, and he just looked at him like another customer. And they went out and played a set or two or whatever it was. I don't remember the exact thing, but he beat him for $100.
Wonderful.
That's funny. Hey, Lordy, we're out of time.
We
really appreciate you being on.
All right, you guys.
Thank you, Lordy.
Really appreciate it. May 19th, everybody, Tennis Channel, May 19th.
You got it. So thank you. Thank you. Thanks to Dan Noon and Craig Blanke. Dan's our board operator, and Craig Blanke's our co-executive, and to Dave Sniff, our program executive. Thank you for listening. It's been a great evening. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Good night now.